Case number 13-5136, Kara Grunewald et al. Appellants v. Jonathan B. Jarvis et al. Ms. Meyer for the appellants, Mr. McFadden for the appellees.
Thank you, and may it please the court. In this case, the plaintiffs challenge a decision by the National Park Service to kill native wildlife in Rock Creek Park, a national park, for the first time in the 123-year history of this national park for the purpose of preserving the native vegetation without even considering something that the record shows is a far more critical problem, and that is the destruction of the park by invasive non-native species. In the words of the agency itself, in the record at JA-126, these exotic non-native species are, quote, aggressively displacing and killing native plants.
That's absolutely true. Why does that mean that they can't act on controlling the deer population?
For a number of reasons, Your Honor. First of all, under NEPA, they have to consider as an alternative to doing something to protect the native vegetation, doing something to eradicate the non-native vegetation as an alternative or as a related action, which they have not done.
Is it in any way inconsistent with killing deer to also at the same time try to control exotic?
Yes, it is, Your Honor, because... Yes,
you can't kill deer while you're pouring out weed killer, huh?
Oh, they could possibly determine that it makes sense to do them together, Your Honor, but here they never analyzed whether or not they should do them together. They focused solely on reducing the number of deer and did not, either as an alternative, a reasonable alternative, which is required under NEPA, or as a connected or similar action, which is required under NEPA, consider also doing something about this far more critical problem. And I want to emphasize, it's underscored by the Enabling Act here, which set up this park, which the agency itself agrees, even under Chevron Step 2, it has an obligation to protect all of the native vegetation and plant life in this park.
Do I have that Enabling Act in front of you?
I do.
Would you read without ellipses the part that you're talking about? Without any ellipses, read what it really says.
It's Section 7 of the Enabling Act. It says that the public park authorized and established by this act shall be under the joint control of the commissioners of the District of Columbia and the chief of engineers of the United States Army, whose duty it shall be, as soon as practicable, to lay out and prepare roadways and bridle paths to be used for driving and for horseback riding, respectively, and footways for pedestrians, and whose duty it shall also be to make and publish such regulations as they deem necessary or proper for the care and management of the same. Such regulations shall provide for the preservation from injury or spoliation of all timber, animals, or curiosities within said park and their retention in their natural condition as nearly as possible.
So we're talking about regulations on roadways and bridle paths. Does that have anything to do with what we're doing here?
Well, that's actually, we're not talking about just regulations.
You just read me where it says you are. It says lay out and prepare roadways and bridle paths, and whose duty should be to make the public regulations that are necessary and proper for care and management.
Well, Your Honor, there's a semicolon after regulations.
Only a semicolon.
Well, semicolon.
Only a
sometimes.
Semicolon. There is not a period. There is not any other regulations referred to. And no matter what punctuation is there's no other regulation referred to.
That is true, Your Honor. And so I'm willing to go with the government's...
Since that's true, we don't need to get the Chevron 2, do we? The Chevron
1? I think we do, Your Honor, because the way this agency has consistently, forever, until this case, construed this particular statute that I just read, is that it requires, it is a, quote, legislative mandate, that is what the agency has said, to preserve the ecological resources of this park in, quote, as natural a condition as possible. And also, Your Honor, and that's at JA 577 in their own general management plan, and they have also said that that legislative mandate applies to, quote, all plan recommendations and operational decisions, end quote.
What's the page of that again?
That's also at General Management Plan 577. And I think...
JA?
577. And that becomes very important because they're not talking about just regulations. And in fact, Your Honor, in this case, in their brief, they make the argument that in their record of decision, they in fact relied on the Enabling Act to carry out their deer decision, also not a regulation, Your Honor. So I think it becomes very important to look at how this agency has, again, until this litigation, construed the Enabling Act that set up this park 123 years ago as a place where there would be no killing of wildlife.
Well, can you hold on to that part? I understand your argument that they haven't taken the only bridle paths position before, but as nearly as possible, why can't they reasonably read that to mean as nearly as possible to balance the concerns of all of both the animals and the vegetation, and therefore consistent with the Organic Act in that way?
I think they can read it to require them to balance all of the ecological, protect all of the ecological resources in the park, yes.
So not only that you can't kill unless it's absolutely necessary, but just as in order to maintain the appropriate balance.
Well, as nearly as possible, I think it imposes a mandate on the agency. For example, in this case, this is a perfect example, Your Honor. If there is a way to deal with a non-native species that's causing the problem, they should certainly be focusing on that long before they turn their attention to killing a native species. And to support my argument, I want to rely on what the government itself said in its brief to the district court, summary judgment brief on page 30, which can be found at the joint appendix at page 73. And this is what the government said to the district court. The National Park Service's interpretation that an active approach to deer management is required when necessary to protect other ecological resources is not only consistent with both the text of the enabling statute and National Park Service's interpretation of its duties under that statute, under the statute, I'm still quoting, but such an approach is arguably compelled by the statute's direction to preserve all resources, : National Park Service must reduce the deer population if necessary to prevent injury or spoliation of the timber and other resources of the park and the retention in their natural condition as nearly as possible.
Didn't the record reflect that the browse line was considered here?
Actually,
destruction of vegetation?
No, Your Honor. Actually, in this particular park, the Park Service noted that the browse line is not prominent.
Not prominent.
And that means there is no real evidence.
How about the exclusion plots where they excluded deer and didn't have the kind of loss of domestic?
Yes, they had two different studies, Your Honor, that they're relying on here. They have the Hatfield 2008 study and the Hatfield 2011 study. The Hatfield 2008 study did not involve anything other than unfenced plots, which meant there was no way to tell whether or not the deer, as opposed to the invasive plant species, were causing any problem with vegetation in the park. In fact, their own authors state in that study, it is not possible to, quote, discern the cause of the decline in vegetation, and that's at JA 228. The second study that they relied on, the Kraft and Hatfield study for 2011, did use the paired plots, as you mentioned. However, what it didn't do, and this is explained at JA307, at the end of that study, is it never measured the very data that the Park Service said it needs, tree seedling density. It didn't do that. It recommends they do that in the future. And therefore, that study also doesn't show that the deer, as opposed to something else, and we submit it's the invasive species that have taken over that park, Your Honor, is causing the problem.
I thought the government read the Kraft and Hatfield study to show that the deer were a primary cause and that given the rate of browsing by the deer as revealed by that study, that even, you know, that they couldn't keep up with reforestation without dealing with the deer problem.
Well, they do rely on the study for that, Your Honor. However, what that study does not show is that they collected the data that the government itself said was necessary to warrant killing the deer, and that's what they refer to as the threshold for taking action.
Where did the government say that data was necessary to warrant killing the deer?
And they say it at the final environmental impact statement at JA373, and they say it at the record of decision at page 4, which can be found at JA543. That's where they refer to what would be the threshold for taking action to start killing the deer. And that's when they talk about we'd have to have this paired plot study that showed that where we measured the actual tree seedling density and in a paired plot study to be able to show that it's the deer, not the invasive species. And in further answer to your question, Judge Pillard, the scientists who did the second study actually concluded that, and I quote, cover by non-natives did not differ significantly between the paired exclosed deer kept out and the unfenced plots until the last 2 years of the study where more non-native species were found. In other words, even in the plots where you take out the deer can't get in there. Eventually, what happens? What did they find? The invasive non-native species are still going to take over the native vegetation. And all we're saying here, Your Honor, is they should at least have to look at these interrelated issues.
But they are looking at them. I thought the record revealed that they actually have quite a robust program of dealing with the exotic plant species, and that really your challenge is that they need to procedurally do that together with the challenge, with the dealing with the deer. But we do owe a certain amount of deference to the National Park Service in terms of which objectives they choose and then how they choose to attack them. And to the extent that they've chosen the deer population as the problem, I'm not sure that I follow your argument about how we could require them to choose a different objective, a broader, reframed objective.
A couple of answers to that, Your Honor. First of all, when you say robust eradication of non-native species, that's just not true. And in fact, the government makes it absolutely clear that at best they have maintained the status quo on that front. They complain in their brief about not having to go above and beyond what they are doing anyway. And at the oral argument below, counsel for the government actually admitted to the judge that they had shifted away from doing something about non-native species. So I would take issue with there being a robust attack here to do something about this non-native problem that's taken on over the park. The second answer is a more legal one, which is that, again, under NEPA, Your Honor, they're required to look at it as at least an alternative to killing the deer, particularly when the objects of the two programs are the same, i.e., protect the native vegetation. And they're also required to look at them together to see, well, if we have limited resources, maybe we should be spending more on doing something about the invasive species that are taking over the park. And that might obviate the need to kill some deer or any deer at all. That's what they've never done.
Can I back you up to the JA373 a moment? Did I understand you to say that the government there stated they didn't have enough information to make the deer determination?
No, I told you what they said they needed. What they needed, and then I explained why their studies.
I see deer mentioned many times on that page. I don't find the statement that you're talking about.
What I was explaining, Your Honor, is what the agency told the public, what data it needed in order to have a threshold.
Okay, tell me what you're talking about, please.
I hope I gave you the right one. Middle of that page, it starts with based. We're at JA 373. Based on the science team's review of the literature, the park decided to use Stout's suggested regeneration standard as the threshold for taking action under this plan. And what I was explaining to you is they don't have the Stout suggested regeneration standard.
Low deer density, successful forest regeneration would be indicated when there are 51 cities more than the surplus. Subplots are 67% of one that's unfenced.
Right.
Park would determine the level of regeneration every 4 years.
Right. And what I was explaining, Your Honor.
4 years from now, we'll look at it again, but I don't see where that says they didn't have what they needed at this point.
What I was explaining, Your Honor, is this is what they set as the threshold for taking action, and then you have to look at the studies they're relying on to see if they have that threshold for taking action. And I was explaining to you why the two studies they rely on not do that. My time is expired.
Can I ask you one? I know this is going to sound like a weird question, but the statute that we're talking about, which says to retain the timber and the animals and the curiosities in their natural condition as nearly as possible, there are several references in the briefs to the proposition that there were no deer in the park in 1890 when the statute was passed. How should we take that on the question of natural condition?
Well, the government itself concedes that park are a native species to the in Rock Creek Park.
I saw that too, and I think that makes sense. But the fact that they're native species is not the same as their retention in their natural condition as nearly as possible. And they're only talking about retention. So doesn't that sound like whatever the condition was in 1890, or is this an Endangered Species Act sort of thing that you have to go back?
It's an enabling act, Your Honor. It sets up what the purpose of this park is, and therefore, if there are native species in 1890 or 1920 or 1932 or 2014, they are supposed to be protected, if they can be.
But in their natural condition, so what was the condition in 1890? When do you go back to determine how many? There's not a proposal to kill all the deer in the park.
There's a proposal to kill a huge number of them. In fact, they've already killed more than a third of the total population.
Well, you understand the question I'm asking. How do we decide what the natural condition of deer were in the park if there were none in 1890? What did Congress think they meant, or what did Congress mean when they said that?
Well, I think they meant, first of all, I don't accept that there weren't any deer in 1890. There's nothing in the record that shows that. There may very well be. They say they don't have any historic records one way or the other. Number two, I think you have to read the statute as protecting the native population of animals and plant species at whatever point in time you're at, and as nearly as possible certainly means not killing them, because in order to preserve them in their natural condition, they need to be alive.
My question is, I mean, there is an argument here that there are more deer here than there were before, and there are a number of causes. They're not all natural. That is, not all natural to this park.
Right.
They're caused by a lot of building construction everywhere else in the area, leaving this as the only remaining place where deer can roam. But does that tell us anything about what population of deer is the natural condition at the that they have to retain?
Well, I think one thing you look at when you're deciding whether or not there's an overpopulation of deer, they've exceeded their biological carrying capacity, is how biologists do it. You look at the numbers. Here the population numbers have been stable. In fact, the government admits they're going down on their own. Number two, you look at whether or not there's a prominent browse line, as Judge Santel mentioned. Here we don't have that. You look at whether or not these deer are malnourished, they're thin, they're starving. No, we don't have that either. And I've got sites for all of this, the JA 410 for the final environmental assessment. You compare, so these deer are pretty healthy. I'll tell you what's really going on. Because the invasive species, plant species, have so taken over the native plant species, which the deer over many years have evolved to eat. The deer have less to eat in the park, and what's happening is the deer are leaving the park to look for food, and they're getting hit by cars and going into people's gardens.
I think we're getting outside the
record. And that's a cultural capacity.
Which may have been my fault.
And that's a different issue altogether, Your Honor.
Okay. I think Judge Pillar had a question.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Hear from the other side.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Lane McFadden. I represent the National Park Service. The plaintiffs have presented to you what is essentially a false choice, the idea that the agency must choose between either deer or exotic plant management and that it has chosen the deer. It is true, as the record does reflect, there is a robust exotic plant management strategy ongoing in the park today as it was when the record of decision was signed. Park Service is spending more money on exotic plant management each year than it is on deer management. And it is a continued effort on all fronts to restore the ecological and preserve the ecological resources of Rock Creek Park. From the perspective of NEPA, though, it's important to note that no commenter ever suggested to the Park Service during either the scoping comments or the comments on the draft EIS that an alternative E was required, that the agency should change its purpose and need, which clearly indicates the purpose and need of the project was a white-tailed deer management plan to deal with what was becoming the dominant species of the park, to add an alternative to the EIS which would not address the deer but would focus exclusively on exotic plants.
Can I just pause? Oh, I'm sorry. No, I jumped you the last time. Now it's your turn.
Can you address the statutory argument? It does seem odd that the Park Service has consistently viewed the Rock Creek Park Enabling Act as giving it general regulatory authority and responsibility over the park, and that in this litigation it's making arguments that it applies only to the bridle paths and or that somehow the relationship between the National Park Service organic statute and the Rock Creek Park Enabling Act limits the latter only to issues that it directly and specifically addresses. I find both of those arguments somewhat questionable.
I'm happy to address them, Your Honor. As to the first part of your question, the general discretion to promulgate regulations to govern the park has largely been from Section 1 of the Organic Act, not specifically from the Rock Creek Park Enabling Act. Of course, the Organic Act in 1CB requires that anything they do in the park be consistent with.
But the Enabling Act is there, too, and the Organic Act requires respect for each particular act, such as the Enabling Act.
Indeed it does, yes.
And so can you deal with that language that the challengers are saying that the Act gives the Park Service responsibility to provide for the preservation from injury or spoliation of all timber, animals, or curiosities within said park. And you've, rather than justify your program under that language, you've said it doesn't apply. And if it, and I guess, can you explain why, given the semicolon and given that last sentence, which says that you have to preserve all the timber, animals, or curiosities within the park, how you can read that not to apply to all the timber and curiosities within the park?
Right. To address that specific phraseology first, that phrase applies to such regulations, which refers back then to the prior sentence. Such regulations are... they are to be promulgated for the care and management of the same. The antecedent of the same is in that same sentence as the same, which is the establishment of routes through the park, which had never existed before. Roadways, pathways.
Well, the park itself is also in the same sentence, right? It's all part of the same sentence. It's not the first the first clause. I think Judge Santel is onto something. We should call these clauses because there's a lot of things in this one sentence. And it begins with the public park is under the control of the commissioner. So is your position, so you say that the word same only applies to the bridle paths and the regulations, right?
Well, we group them, so we say that it replies to the roadways, bridle paths, and footways.
Yeah, you're down to the quality.
Yeah. Now we are on the quality.
All right, so your position is that in 1890, when there was no Organic Act, the only authority of the commissioners was over the paths, and they had no authority at all over the rest of the park? That seems...
Can I amend your question?
Of course.
No authority to make regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
We're not questioning whether there's authority overall or not, just whether there's authority to make regulations.
Yes, if Judge Santel is correct, that's our position, that until the Organic Act, there was no specific authority to promulgate regulations outside of this area, which was the major activity within the park. It was a forest reserved for public use, and the one thing authorized to do in it was to build roads through the middle of it. And so it's quite reasonable to think you would do that with care, and you would do it in a manner...
So there couldn't be any regulations, for example, about building campfires that might burn down the forest. That they would have no authority over.
Well, they would have authority under other statutes, and I'm sorry that this argument isn't explained in the brief, but there would be other federal authorities for actions on federal land that could damage or injure the federal property. The only rules that could be made would not be limited exclusively to the Enabling Act. But
if in fact there were any regulations made covering anything else on the park during the years between this and the Organic Act.
I'm not aware of any. Yeah.
Such as regulations on where people could bathe and whether they could do that within public view or camping or things like that?
I don't know of those regulations, Your Honor. I realize it's only partially responsive to your question.
This was an error before we had so many regulations.
But accepting for sake of today that this language about the preservation of animals in the park and retention in their natural condition as nearly as possible has some effect on the deer management plan. We believe the deer management plan is absolutely in accordance with that language. The fact that they can only be retained in their natural condition as nearly as possible clearly grants some discretion to the National Park Service to determine how nearly they can preserve these animals and how possible it will be.
My difficulty is if we disagree with your statutory reading, what remedial leeway do we have? Do we have to remand this for you to deal with what we might think is a different reading from the one that you've adopted in this litigation?
I suppose that depends on the nature of the determination, Your Honor. I mean, we believe that it's explicitly authorized by Section 3 of the Organic Act, which we've not discussed here today, but which is a major component of the brief, which explicitly authorizes the destruction of detrimental animals in the park.
The way that the petitioner, Grunewald has read it, is that the Organic Act is subject to further limitations in the Enabling Act. And there's something to that. And the Organic Act says that each park has to be administered, each particular park has to be administered pursuant to the dictates of that park's specific enabling legislation. So the specific would, to the extent that it sets forth a different standard, would govern over the general. And I understand that you've largely briefed this under the Organic Act. But my question is, if we read the Enabling Act to survive and to more generally govern the park, is there any way that we could affirm what you've done, even assuming, as you have, put forward an argument here in litigation that you could have conformed your program to the Enabling Act under such reading?
Are you asking what the remedy would be if Your Honor's found that we had violated the Enabling Act, or are you asking whether...
The Enabling Act applies much more broadly than you say it does.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think this decision, as I was trying to say before, is easily upheld under this language of the Enabling Act were you to find that it applies. I mean, the fact is what you have is you have a population of deer, unlike anything the park has ever seen, in which the first page of the final EIS explains, is threatening to become the dominant species to overwhelm the native vegetation of the park. And the native vegetation, although not specifically mentioned by the Enabling Act, but for the explicit exception of timber, is very much what the Park Service considers an important component of its protection of the park. That's the language that the plaintiffs cited at JA 577, which comes from the Statement of Purpose for the General Management Plan of the Rock Creek Park, which is where they compile a number of authorities. There are other statutes which are mentioned on that page that established the Rock Creek Parkway, that added a number of reserves for tributaries and other parts of the watershed. And those statutes specifically say things about the preservation of the forest and the natural scenery. And there are other Park Service policies that have been synthesized. So the Park Service's current interpretation of its overall legislative mandate, not its specific legislative mandate limited exclusively to the Rock Creek Park Enabling Act, but the synthesis of all those authorities is that it must protect the ecological resources of the park. And that was the guiding principle under which it operated when it approved the white-tailed deer management plan. We believe that retention of the current population of deer at its current population density would not be retention in their natural condition, and it is not possible to do so because the very native vegetation of the park is threatened. The suggestion made in argument today that exotic plants are so overwhelming the park that it's irrelevant what the deer do is contravened by the record. You can see.
But aren't they at least related in the, I mean, when we're looking at the NEPA claim, there's a requirement that any problems that are cumulative or synergistic be considered together. And how can you argue that these are not similar or connected, given that the principal reason for regulating the deer, I gather, is not because they're running in front of cars, it's not because they're coming into my garden, but in fact because of the impact on the native vegetation.
Right.
And that's so, it's the same problem as the one to be addressed by the exotic plant.
Well, regulation. No, Your Honor, it's these programs have the same goals, which is the restoration of the natural state of the park. They're very different problems. Deer browsing a plant and the plant being outcompeted by a shady vine is, from the native plant's perspective, a very different problem. And so they are treated in very different ways. Whether or not these actions...
From the environmental point of view of citizens looking at the plants, isn't the goal to keep the plants? That is, to keep a sufficient number of native plants. And there's two ways to do that. One is call the deer, and one is call the exotics. So why aren't they both alternatives?
Because they have to be done in conjunction, Your Honor. You can see it at JE 539.
They have to be done in conjunction. Why don't you have to consider them together?
Well, there's a question of whether you consider them together, and of course that's done in the final EIS in the cumulative impacts section. Whether you have to add them as an alternative is a very different question under NEPA, and that we reject. We think that was not required. Whether the other
because you don't think that culling the exotics, I'm going to use culling for this purpose, would be sufficient to solve the problem, even if you did that. So it's not a complete alternative. You would still have to go forward, and that's what the rest of your information, comparing the plots, et cetera, shows. Is that the reason?
That's the primary reason.
So
yes.
The reason is not that our goal is to cull deer, and exotics aren't part of that goal. Which is, in a way, the way you presented in the brief. Rather, the point is that they may both have the same goal, but you're not going to be able to reach the goal with this alternative, or at least to say no one has suggested it sufficiently in the record, which is the point you started
with. It's both. No one suggested it, and had they suggested it, it would not have been adopted as an alternative, precisely because it would not have served the purpose and need. There are interior parts of the forest where there are very little invasive plants, and nevertheless, those native plants are being browsed. They are not at a healthy regeneration level, and the deer problem has to be addressed whether or not you are also addressing exotic plants, which, of course, the Park Service is.
But I take Grunewald's point to be somewhat more nuanced, at least at argument today, that considering them together is precisely what NEPA would require, because even though you might need to address the deer in some way, you might need to address them in a lot more surgical way if the exotic plant problem were dealt with more forcefully.
Well, let me address that answer by actually talking about the applicable regulations briefly, if I may. The connected and similar action regulations promulgated by CEQ are at 40 CFR 1508.25. A1 is connected actions, and it has very specific definitions, which this does not meet for a number of reasons. One is that the ongoing management of exotic plants in the national park is by and large subject to a categorical exclusion from NEPA, which is published by the National Park Service, which specifically addresses the removal of exotic plants from the national park system. So it by itself is not an action that requires further consideration under NEPA, nor was there any new imminent action which was being proposed, which the agency neglected to mention or consider as part of its EIS for the deer management plan. If you go down to A3 of that same regulation, that is the similar actions definition, and that one is permissive. It says an agency may wish to analyze these actions in the same impact statement, but for the same reasons the agency did not identify, nor did a commenter identify, a connected action. There was no similar action which needed further addressing other than the discussion of ongoing exotic plants and their relationship, which is in the administrative record. And the district court correctly held that there's considerable discussion of the exotic plant problem in the final environmental impact statement, and that does give you the context to understand why it is that something must be also done to specifically address the overpopulated deer densities within the park, that there is no either-or proposition. They both have to be handled. Real quickly, to address the threshold for taking action question that was mentioned, that information, the tree seedling density counts required by the studies, are, as I think this court correctly pointed out, they are the indicators of success of the deer management plan. If at some point in the future during the monitoring program you have 67% of your plots that have a healthy number of tree seedlings, then you know that the management has been a success and there will be no longer any reason to further reduce the deer population density. That is how you can tell going forward whether the forest will be healthy. It is irrefutable that the Hatfield studies, as Hatfield themselves say, are consistent with deer browsing. I mean, browsing is not the action of a native, of an exotic plant. It is the action of an animal. Here it's clearly the deer. We know what has happened to the park in the past and where we are now. The threshold for taking action will tell us when we've succeeded on this plan and where we will be in the point in the future where we have a healthy, regenerated native forest within Rock Creek Park.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any time left? All right, we'll give you another 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I want to address the government counsel's statement that they are seeing deer populations in Rock Creek Park as they've never seen before. It's just not true. If you look at JA-363, which is their own chart of the deer populations for the 10 years preceding their decision, you will see much higher populations of deer in previous years. In fact, the last 2 years in the chart were some of the lowest populations that they were seeing in the park, and their own brief admits that deer are doing fine on their own. They're going up and down in their own. The second thing I want to say is in response to Judge Garland's question, where the government made this bold statement today that they have decided that they have to kill the deer because if they dealt with the invasive species, that would not cure the problem. They'd still have to kill the deer. Nowhere will you find that in the record, Your Honor.
Is there a place in the record where somebody suggested that dealing with the exotics would be a substitute for dealing with the deer?
Yes. The science team, which was tasked only with the task
I'm talking about a commenter who suggested it be considered as an alternative.
We have those sites in our brief, Your Honor. Plaintiff Grunwald actually said.
I saw the sites. I didn't see one that suggested that that you would not also have to deal with the deer at all.
These are lay people. They were basically saying, if you're really trying to protect the plants, why aren't you doing something about the invasive species?
Is a lay person's, most of them were rhetorical questions
yes.
in that way. Is that enough to create, for us to say it was not reasonable for the agency to not consider the alternative because lay people just asked the question?
Yes, especially, Your Honor, when the Park Service was sitting on a voluminous administrative record that the lay people didn't have access to that showed that this was a huge problem in this park. And let me give you one more site. Mm-hmm. If you look at JA-173, and I think this goes directly to the question you asked government's counsel, their own science team, and again, they were only asked to decide how best to reduce the deer. They weren't asked to consider policy or alternatives, just how to reduce the deer. Their own science team said, quote, if deer abundance is controlled but not exotics, habitat may not have true recovery, end quote.
Right. One thing I wonder about is cost, because government counsel said they're spending more on eradication of exotics. And when you think about it's very labor-intensive and challenging to eradicate the exotics. And is that not a permissible ground for the allocation of emphases in the dual-track program on deer versus exotics?
I think it may be, Your Honor, if they had actually looked at them together, and that's our point. We don't know what the outcome of the proper analysis would have been. If they have limited resources, perhaps it makes sense to spend them one way or the other, although we do believe that however they make that decision, it has to be at least informed by this enabling statute, which requires a preference for saving the native species, whether it's wildlife or plant, over the invasive species. But they have not done that analysis, and the self-serving statement today that they're spending more and more on eradicating exotics is just not squared with what they said in their brief and what the record shows, Your Honor. They admit that they're maintaining the status quo with respect to what, at best, what they've done with exotics. And again, the counsel before the district court judge said they actually shifted away from doing worrying about exotics to killing the deer in 2005. So, again, our position is that underneath, but these have to be considered together, and our other arguments, I guess, will rest on the brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
I think we'll take the matter under submission. While the counsel for the next case are moving up, we'll take a brief recess.